Moncrief on News Talk.
With the all-new Dacia Duster. We've even impressed ourselves with this one.
53106 is our text number. That will cost you 30 cent. Time to look out at the wider world and find out about some of the other stories taking place out there. We're joined once again by Jonathan de Burka Butler. Jonathan, good afternoon.
Sean, how are you?
Right, let's go to Turkey first. This is a story about a musician who's died on hunger strike. But is this correct? He's the second person, a member of one particular group, to do this.
Yeah, so the group is called Grup Yarım, and it's been on the go since the mid-1980s, 1985 or 1986, I think. And they have apparently strong connections to an outlawed group, the Revolutionary People's Liberation Party Front, who are kind of a left-wing group that, as I said, have been outlawed and recognized as terrorist organizations by several countries around the world, not just in Turkey. So this group, who are popular within certain strands of Turkish society and outside of Turkey as well, have always been under the radar of the Turkish authorities, and they've been prohibited from performing within Turkey since 2016, all right? And as a protest for that, several of their members have gone on hunger strike in the last couple of years. And one of those was a man by the name of İbrahim Gökçek, who's 40, was 41, and he died on Thursday. And he was the bass player with the group. And on Tuesday, he was brought to intensive care after he abandoned the hunger strike of 323 days, would you believe? But unfortunately, he passed away. Now, as you mentioned at the top there, he's not the first person to die of hunger strike from this particular group. The group's 28-year-old singer, woman by the name of Helen Bolek, she died on the 3rd of April, I think it was, after 288 days on hunger strike. So, fairly tragic, has to be said.
And the group that they're supposedly affiliated with, the Revolutionary People's Liberation Party Front, which sounds like something out of The Life of Brian, what is it that they want?
A socialist revolution, I think, to put it in a nutshell, and that doesn't go down too well, apparently, with various different authorities. They've been going since the mid-70s, which would kind of tie in with a lot of those movements from around Europe at that time. They've had various degrees of militancy throughout their history.
Right, DRC we're going to go to first, that being Democratic Republic of Congo, and pollution there is causing birth defects.
Yeah, so we've known for a very long time that certain areas within the Copper Belt across Zambia and the Democratic Republic of the Congo are very, very polluted. And there's been lots of documentaries and some are fairly harrowing, to be honest with you, about how children are used to mine for cobalt and copper and various different elements that often end up in mobile phones and computers and parts for batteries for various different electronics and things like that. And so anecdotal evidence had been gathering for a very long time that, NGOs and local doctors were saying that people who worked in these mines were giving birth to children who had serious birth defects. So a few universities got together, two from Belgium and one from the Democratic Republic of the Congo, and decided to do a test where they basically compared 138 newborn children of families within that copper belt with 108 children who were born outside that particular zone but within the same state, if you get me. And they found that the differences were quite stark, to be honest with you. They can't say for sure why, so they've said that it's not still clear how these birth defects arise. They do see they reckon there is a correlation between the exposure to these chemicals and to these birth defects.
Right, but they don't know if it's specific ones or just a cocktail of them.
Yeah, well, so it's a cocktail of various different defects, basically, that they're talking about. But I suppose, are you asking they don't know which specific chemicals?
Yeah,
No, they don't know yet. But so far, the evidence suggests that, you know, parents working in mines, there's a clear difference between them and parents who aren't working in mines, if that makes sense.
Yeah, well, indeed it does. Right, yeah. Malawi we're going to go to next. Now, a court has decided that last year's presidential election, there wasn't one last year. Is that essentially what they found?
Well, there was one, all right, but they just didn't think that it was done properly. So President Peter Mutharika, who we've spoken about a number of times, he's relatively, or was anyway, relatively well regarded in the international community. He's worked for various different international organizations. I think he's in his late 70s now, but he was going for a second term last year, but various irregularities were seen, vote tampering and the like. He won his election by 3% over his nearest rival, a man by the name of Lazarus Chikwera. And there was various question marks that were raised over this particular election, as I said. And it went to the Electoral Commission, who said there was nothing wrong with it. But then it went to court. And the Constitutional Court said that it was invalid because of these irregularities. Mutharika and his team challenged that. They went to the Supreme Court. But the Supreme Court last Friday basically said that the presidential elections remained nullified and a fresh vote will be held in July. So that's what's coming up. So I don't know what position that puts him in now. I suppose he's a caretaker president until those elections take place. But it's thrown up an interesting problem for both himself and his campaign and the opposition, in that both of them, that is Mutharika and his closest rival Chikwera, have tried to change their vice presidential running mates. And they've been told by the Supreme Court that they're not allowed to do that, that they must go back basically to the ballot or the people that were on the ballot originally, and those people have to run. Now, Chikwera, who was the head of the opposition parties, had drafted in the guy who came third in last year's election, if you get me.
Yeah, yeah.
He would have got 20% of the vote, and he's now been told that he can't use him. So it'll be interesting to see how this pans out in the longer term. But yet there's been a lot of trouble and protests and various different marches and rallying around this, but now the decision stands and the elections will take place in July.
Right, okay. So both candidates, as far as we know, will be running again.
Yeah, both. Oh, they're both definitely going to run. I mean, Chikwera has been jumping at the bit for a number of years, so he's definitely going to run. But as I said, as to whether he will be allowed to run with the fellow who came third is another question altogether. If he does, then he has a very good chance of winning, I suspect.
Right. Brazil we're going to go to next. And the Supreme Court has lifted restrictions on blood donations. What kind of restrictions were there?
So these were rules that limited gay and bisexual men from donating blood. These would have been rules that were brought in a lot of countries in the 1980s because of HIV and AIDS, but various different countries around the world have lifted those bans. And interestingly enough, because of a shortage in blood supplies, the United States, Denmark, and our very close neighbours, Northern Ireland, have changed. I don't know if that got much coverage, actually. Have all changed the rules so that men can give blood 3 months after their latest gay sexual encounter, right? That's in those countries. Now, in Brazil, the case had been going for about 4 years, all right? 2016 is when it was brought. And they finally made the decision in the Supreme Court on Friday in favor of turning these guidelines around. So I think what's really interesting about this is, and obviously we've covered the fact that Bolsonaro, President Bolsonaro, is a rather conservative individual, and he would probably not be in favor of this kind of thing. So I had a look to see who the Supreme Court was made up of in Brazil. And sure enough, there are 11 justices on it, and 7 of those were appointed by Dilma and Lula. And it's quite interesting to find that the result that was posted on Friday was 7 of the 11 justices voted on Friday in favour of overthrowing the guidelines.
Right.
So it might tell us a lot.
But rather like the American system, is it within the president's gift to appoint new judges to the Supreme Court?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, it is, but the feeling I get from from what I saw is that somebody has to retire first, as in, I think, isn't that the American system as well?
Mm.
And then they appoint the latest person. But there hasn't been an appointment there, I think, since 2017. I'm open to correction on that, but I think it's 2017 and he hasn't been there that long.
Right. OK, Chile, we're going to go to now. Oh, gosh. And there's going to be a Pinochet in government.
Yes, I find this a bit of a stretch. But anyway, her name is Macarena Santelices. She would be late 30s, early 40s. Not that that's of any significance, really. But anyway, she's the grandniece of Augusto Pinochet.
Mm.
So that's a few generations away. But anyway, not everybody's happy about it. She was actually made the Minister for Women and Equality under Sebastián Piñera. Okay, so she's a member of the UDI party and they are in coalition with Sebastián Piñera's party, right? You know, there's a few reasons why people aren't happy with this. One is that she doesn't have a background in women's studies or women's rights issues. That's what some feminist organizations are saying. But there's also the small matter of her great uncle being, you know, he oversaw murder and rape, basically, and he was an awful man. So, as you can imagine, it's stoked tensions, to say the least.
But is there any evidence that she had anything to do with what her grandfather did? Is she recorded as saying, granddad was grand and I support it all?
Yeah, well, that's the same thing. And I suppose that's the point. You know, opponents have pointed out to a statement that she made in a newspaper in 2006, where she said, we cannot ignore the good things about the military regime. But, you know, in her opening speech, she actually said, you know, okay, because I have certain political tendency doesn't mean I endorse, you know, grave events or violations of human rights. And she said that these things should be condemned. So it's hard to know. I mean, she's playing out of both sides of her mouth, I suppose. She has to pander to her supporters, not making excuses for her, obviously. But you know, grandniece, it's a bit far away. But anyway, they're not happy. Certain people aren't happy.
Right, India, we're going to go to next. And I suppose this is a reminder that, routinely terrible things happen in populist countries and we don't even read about it because just the figure isn't large enough. Now, this is a chemical leak in India, which has killed 11 people.
Yeah, the last time I looked at this, it was 11 people. I suspect that the figures have gone up, Sean, to be honest with you. It was a chemical leak that happened in Visakhapatnam, which is on the east coast of India, right? It's an industrial town. It has a population of about 5 million people. So it's a busy enough place, although I suppose in India it would be considered relatively small. But officials said that the leak was from 2 5,000-ton tanks and happened as workers were preparing to restart the facility after it had been locked down due to coronavirus. Now, what's staggering about this, Sean, is the fact that this was the worst of three explosions that happened on the same day in similar sort of factories. So there was two other factories which had been closed down for a couple of weeks. Obviously, things had rusted over or whatever happens, or enough oil hadn't been put on them. And when they cranked them back up again, there was three explosions. This was just happened to be the worst one. So what happened in this case was it's from a plastics plant that was owned by the LG Corp. They make, you know, a big company. I think they had a turnover of 150 billion or something like that in 2018. Big company. And it leaked styrene into the surrounding residential area. So people were basically, it happened at 3 a.m. in the morning. So people were breathing it in and you know, authorities were going into houses later when things had calmed down, finding people dead in their beds. It was absolutely staggering. But it also led to, you know, about 300 to 400 people being brought to hospital as well. So still dealing with that.
My God, that's horrific. Yeah. And China we're going to go to finally, where if you steal a manhole cover, It could be the worst possible sentence ever.
Yes, the authorities have now, this is the Supreme Court, People's Court, the Supreme People's Procuratorate, and the Ministry of Public Security have issued a joint statement telling courts to penalise people more strictly if they have been found stealing or damaging manhole covers. And basically, they're putting it into the group where they would, where people would be endangering transportation and endangering public safety, the maximum penalty for which is the death sentence. Apparently, between 2017 and 2019, there was more than 70 injuries or deaths due to broken or stolen manhole covers in China. So they're looking to crack down on that.
My word. Right, so what should we look out for over the next week or so?
Yeah, an amazing thing. Tomorrow, Mike Pompeo, who's the US Secretary of State, of course, is actually getting on a plane and going to Israel to discuss the coronavirus.
Right.
It seems slightly contradictory, but anyway, Friday, May 15th.
But the Israelis, as I understand it, have fairly good, they're fairly up on the track and trace aspect of it, but...
Well, hopefully they'll keep Pompeo there.
Yeah.
We won't be able to go back. Friday, May 15th is ironically enough, the International Day of Families. Mm-hmm. So you won't be able to get out that day. And on Sunday, the 17th, there's a presidential vote in Burundi, where, interestingly enough, Pierre Nkurunziza, who's been president there since 2005, isn't actually running, but he does have a horse in the race, so maybe he is proxy running.
Right. Okay. Well, no doubt Jonathan will be telling us about that in the not too distant future. Jonathan, thanks a million for talking to us. Jonathan DeBucca Butler there. We'll take a break, back in a couple of minutes.
Moncrief on News Talk
with the all new Dacia Duster. We've even impressed ourselves with this one.